Hi, I'm Tony Rossi for the Christophers, and today I'll be talking with retired Dallas Police Chief David Brown about the racially motivated ambush in 2016 that left five of his police officers dead, the ways in which he is now working to heal the racial divide in this country, and why his Christian faith is the guiding force in everything he does. Stay with us. Christopher Close-Up starts right now. Hello and welcome to Christopher Close-Up. I'm Tony Rossi. In July 2016, Dallas Police Chief David Brown and the city he loves endured an unforgettably horrific day. A sniper sought revenge for the deaths of unarmed black men at the hands of white police officers in other parts of the country, so he murdered five Dallas cops before being killed himself. As an African American and a 33-year veteran of the police department, Chief Brown became a force for finding common ground in our divided country by encouraging dialogue and understanding. He is now sharing his insights and life story in the memoir Called to Rise, A Life in Faithful Service to the Community That Raised Me. To tell us more, I am pleased to welcome to Christopher Close-Up, retired police chief David Brown. Chief Brown, thanks so much for being on the show today.
Thank you so much, Tony, for having me.
Now, we have this book. You wrote this incredible memoir, Call to Rise, and it's really about how you were able to rise after the struggles and tragedies of life knocked you down. So I want to actually start talking about a couple of the people who built that foundation for your ability to rise, and that's namely your mom, Norma Jean, and your great-grandmother, Mabel. So they did not have easy lives themselves. So tell me about how they influenced you and gave you the foundation you needed in life.
I guess, first of all, I've got to confess I'm a mama's boy. So I come from a very matriarchal family where the women were the strong characters and kind of pushed the family forward. So my mother and my great-grandmother were obviously closest to me the way I recount in the book. And what they built in me is very high self-esteem without being arrogant.
Right.
And they started me out with a Christian faith. But my mother especially, significant emphasis on education.
Mm-hmm.
And she sacrificed so much to make sure I got the right start in education, pre-K, kindergarten, first grade. And she really made sure that I made it an important part of my life.
Sure. Well, this is a Catholic radio show, and you write in the book that you attended a private Catholic school as a child, and you say that it set you up for academic success. So I'm just curious, what was it about that school that was so influential for you?
I think there was an emphasis from the nuns. I don't know if there's any Catholic school attendees in your audience, listening audience, but the nuns made sure, first, you were on a grade level at reading.
Yeah.
And it's just saying that you learn to read and then you read to learn at grade level. And then we got above grade level and they just emphasized the basic of education and they structured it in a way where, you know, it just wasn't getting behind wasn't anything that would be accepted, you know, getting behind or misbehaving.
Sure.
Small classroom sizes was important. There was a lot of one-on-one interactions in the classroom and so pre-K, kindergarten, and first grade, my academics were always ahead of grade level because of how the nuns emphasized learning and, you know, strict behavior. And then when I went to public schools, I was always in advanced placement throughout school and ended up getting a full academic ride to the University of Texas at Austin.
Okay, yeah. So you got the emphasis at home on education and in school, so it all worked out for you, and that really giving you the foundation you needed. I'm talking to retired Dallas Police Chief David Brown about his book, Call to Rise. Now, in light of your mom's strong presence in your life, I'm curious about your father's influence, Walter Lee Brown, because you say he wasn't around much in the book, but you also point out that he was essentially a good man. So how did his struggles and successes and mistakes influence you?
So my dad was born, Walter Lee Brown, my dad was born in 1939.
Mm-hmm.
And so he came in Texas, in Dallas here. And so he came up and became a young man in the Jim Crow South.
Mm-hmm.
And that had, and let me say this, I'm recounting this as a child looking at it.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not recounting it as an adult, but then I reflect back as an adult. But
yeah.
Looking at it as a child, my mom called me an old soul because I noticed this about my dad.
Mm-hmm.
He had a very high self-esteem to the point of arrogant. He's 6 foot tall, very good looking, and he hated the Jim Crow South and the way it treated him.
Yeah.
And the opportunities. He'd rather than go to separate but equal schools, segregated schools, he would just not make education something important to him.
Yeah.
Instead of going to, say, you couldn't go to the University of Texas when he was coming up, it was segregated. He would not decided that he would just be rejected of, you know, how society was treating his generation of people of color. So it hurt him more than it hurt in the family, more than he was trying to hurt or make a point to society. And I saw that, and then I reflect back too. I just wish he had swallowed his pride a little bit more and been there for my mother so she wouldn't have to carry all the burden. That's kind of how I looked at it upon reflection. She carried such a great burden to be the, you know, person that was the breadwinner and the disciplinarian and the person that was there for us when we needed her day in, day out.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, one of the things that struck me in the book, too, and it really, this is, I hear this from a lot of guests that I talk to, is that, you know, how one almost seemingly meaningless act of kindness can really have a ripple effect on someone's life. And you write about in the book a kid named Mike Schillingberg, how he really influenced your view of the different races. So talk about him, because I'm guessing you got some of your father's influence with the resentment of white people and because of everything that he endured. So tell me about Mike's story.
Sure. I can tell you about Mike Schillingberg, who I met at 11 years old when I was bused during desegregation here in Dallas in 1971. So that's sixth grade. So Mike and I met when we were both in sixth grade, and I was bused to his school, his all-white school. And well, I think the takeaway for me is, you know, I was shaping, or my environment was shaping my view of a lot of issues, including race. And so I grew up, obviously, in a black neighborhood, in in Dallas. That's where blacks live, in that part of town. Blacks couldn't live in another part of town. So all of my schools were predominantly black. So when desegregation happens and I'm bused, this is not only something I'm trying to understand as an 11-year-old, but I'm sure everyone's, all the adults are fighting over this. I'm just trying to understand, what are they fighting over? I had never been called the N-word or anything like that up to that point, 11 years old. So I'm there and no one speaks to me. You know, I'm looked past like as if I don't exist. And that was my first introduction to kind of how whites treat me differently. And Mike is clueless about all this, and he just wants to be my friend. He's a popular white kid in my class, and one day, several months after, you know, this transition from an all-black school to all-white school, Mike decides to invite me home for dinner after school, and he and I become friends. His mom is real nice to us, we run for class president and vice president, and we get elected. All the other white and black kids begin to interact more, become friends. And it's that one, like you mentioned, that one act of kindness that you think doesn't mean a lot. It changes everything about my view, especially of race and about people in general.
Yeah, yeah. I'm Tony Rossi. You're listening to Christopher Close Up. I'm talking to retired Dallas Police Chief David Brown about his book, Call to Rise. And even as an adult, I mean, I'm reading your book, and you talk about community policing at one point in the book as an adult, and it's something you weren't really in favor of at first. But again, at one point you write, the greatest weapon in an officer's arsenal can be a passing conversation with a resident on the block, which again goes to that simple act of kindness idea. So tell us about community policing and how your views on it evolved.
Well, I started out hiring on in the Dallas Police Department in 1983 during the peak of, or actually the beginning of, mass incarceration and the war on drugs. And that happened from the early 80s when I was a rookie, all the way to the 90s when I started getting promoted to throughout the ranks, sergeant and lieutenant. And so I'm in this because I want to do something in my neighborhood about the crack cocaine epidemic. So I come in, and I am not rejecting the war on drugs or the mass incarceration, because I think, you know, the people who are ruining my old neighborhood, I grew up poor in a high crime area, are the drug dealers on the corner. And so I'm like, yeah, let's put them in jail and let God sort them out. That's my thought. And then when I'm reassigned to a community policing unit, the earliest kind of storefront community policing unit in the housing development, I am not feeling it at all. I'm thinking this is a waste of time until I bump into someone that reminds me of my great-grandmother, Mabel.
Mm.
And we talk and we become friends, and I get introduced to her family, and they have been existing in the housing development under generational poverty since it began, since the New Deal. Mm. Her mother, her grandmother, her kids, are all in, and I'm rethinking my put everybody in jail, like God sort of, man. I'm these people have made a connection with me because that's where I'm from.
Yeah.
I'm from poverty.
Mm-hmm.
But for the grace of God, go out. So I'm looking at them differently. I'm trying to figure out, okay, what about community policing can continue to keep us safer and still make these positive connections? And in my opinion, community policing has a pretty simple definition. It's creating those interactions with people when there's no crisis to build trust.
Mm-hmm.
That's what community policing is. And so whatever you got to do, whatever programming you got to do, or whatever, you know, projects you have to put together to create interactions with people between police and citizens when there's no crisis builds trust.
Yeah.
And you just have to make every effort you can to do that.
And really, it goes to the point of everybody needs to see each other as human beings as opposed to just this person of color or this person of religion. It's really seeing each other as children of God, which we all are.
Yes, and you know what? It's hard to use excessive force on someone you've met when there's no crisis and you have a relationship. It's hard to just begin to first think about using your firearm to resolve an issue when you know their family.
Yeah.
And you know the kids and grandkids.
Mm-hmm.
It humanizes all. It creates a connection that I think yields benefits downstream and makes not only the cops safer, but it makes citizens safer. And it also reduces crime significantly more than the traditional mass incarceration following drugs did.
Yeah, yeah.
That's a fact, actually. That's a fact.
Yeah. I'm talking to retired Dallas Police Chief David Brown. His book is Call to Rise. You know, a lot of cops, they're dealing with the worst impulses of human nature, and it's probably easy to kind of sink into cynicism or despair. How did you manage to avoid that road of cynicism and despair when you were a cop?
I never forgot where I came from.
Mm-hmm.
And that's easy to say, but it was very difficult to do. The policing culture is very dynamic.
Mm-hmm.
And you come in and the people that train you how to do the job become your mentors, and they shape you in the way they do policing. And you can actually build a culture that segregates the policing culture from everybody else, and it doesn't get them. I resisted that from day one. I kind of knew why I was coming into the profession, and because this was my hometown, there were people that knew my parents who I felt obligated to. That I felt like, you know, that I'm standing on their shoulders, people that, you know, shaped me and invested in me, expected the best of me, and looked toward me if I ever made something of myself to give something back.
Mm-hmm.
And I always felt like I owed my community something, like I, you know, had to repay them for doing what they did for me. So I kept that. And so what it did for me is made me a reformer in pushing officers to do things that they don't naturally see as important or as the tradition of policing. And so I risk not being liked.
Yeah.
But I thought it was worthy enough not to be liked to accomplish what we end up accomplishing, the lowest murder rate since 1930.
Wow.
The lowest crime rates in over 50 years in Dallas. You know, the lowest reduction in crime of any tenure, of any chief. But it also included firing more officers than any chief. I fired over 70 officers during my 6-year tenure as chief. So you risk not being liked. And I was just willing not to be liked, but to try to do some things that would reform my profession and give us a chance at getting trust with people.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you acknowledge in Call to Rise that we live in this racially and politically charged climate where some people believe white cops are targeting black citizens and others believe there's a community effort to ambush and kill cops. And you say you don't really like those questions because they're inherently divisive. So I'm curious, how can we move past the divisiveness and create more understanding and civility and respect all around, do you think?
I think to try to take a step, like, I have to think that we're smarter than 11-year-olds. Go back to Mike Schillenberg. I mean, that was such a simple, very, you know, non-complex thing is once you have that intimate interaction with someone at the dinner table,
mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And we try to make it so complex that you got to program race relations. In my opinion, I always thought I was in the people business as a police officer, and just trying to understand people.
Mm-hmm.
And my understanding of people after 33 years of being a cop is those one-on-one relationships, interactions, are the most valuable.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you can take away and say this person is the exception that's different than me. But if you're being honest about it and you inquire and have a true friendship, you find that this is not the exception if you were to take the time and get to have that relationship with people one-on-one, invite them to your home or, you know, go to a restaurant and sit down and have lunch or dinner or coffee and interact and mm-hmm. talk about life.
Yeah.
And we'll find that we are all the same. We have much more in common than any time that we have different. And that is what breaks down these barriers of differences that we have.
Yeah, yeah. You know, we often talk about people who enter the religious life as following a vocation, but I got the impression that for you in this book, being a police officer was also a vocation. Did you see it as a calling for you?
Yes, I believe so. I mean, it was a tug and a pull. And I've got to go back to, I get a full academic ride to UT Austin out of poverty. UT Austin is one of the best colleges in the country.
Mm-hmm.
And it's punching your ticket, and I'm a senior. Getting ready to graduate, it's my last year, and I quit school. I come home and tell my parents, because of the crack cocaine epidemic, I want to be a cop.
Mm-hmm.
I'm so restless at school, I can't finish. So I joined the department, and I go to night school and finish my undergraduate and get my MBA while a cop.
Wow.
But I couldn't have, you know, the easier thing to do was just to punch a ticket and graduate UP Austin, get a job and move out of the community and just complain about what's happened to your old neighborhood. I couldn't do that.
Yeah.
It was something that I had a sense of urgency about doing something about it.
Yeah. I'm Tony Rossi. You're listening to Christopher Close Up. I'm talking to retired police chief David Brown about his book, Call to Rise. He's talking about his calling to become a cop, which really is, it reminds me of one of the ideals of Father James Keller, who founded the Christophers, really encouraging people to take the initiative, to stop complaining about what's wrong with the world and start, taking the initiative to make it better. And that's something that Chief Brown has done in the way he policed in Dallas with incredibly low crime rates, murder rates, everything went down. And of course, Chief, you came to national prominence on July 7th, 2016, after the, there was, it seemed like a peaceful, friendly protest going on black men killed by police officers in other parts of the country. And then into this comes Micah Johnson, who started murdering police officers, which I've got to imagine was the hardest day of your professional life. Just talk about that a little bit.
Yes. Well, I had been a chief, actually one of the few chiefs at that point before July 7th tragedy. I had not lost an officer in the line of duty.
Mm.
And I was proud of that because I had increased training. I had made positive connections with the community and our officers. And so I was proud of that potential legacy. And then you get the call that one officer's down in their grave, another officer's down in their grave. And you get that call five times.
Mm.
And a span of 10 minutes.
Wow.
And it shocks the soul. And you feel a sense of there's evil that's involved and that it's going to require everything you have to confront it.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, being a person of faith, I'm not ashamed of the gospel. I'm a Christian. So I prayed.
Mm-hmm.
I prayed and I went to work. I went to work and all of my experiences, having been in SWAT, having been in community policing, the media circus that you have to navigate as a police officer and a police chief, all came to bear in that one seminal moment. And I was able not only to convey my professional experiences, but the tragedies of losing my first police partner in the line of duty, my brother, killed by a drug dealer, my son, who's adult bipolar onset, is mentally ill, is killed others, mm-hmm. and I lose him, comes to bear. I mean, I'm able to navigate talking with five grieving families and a city and actually on the world stage, Tony. It was on the world stage. Didn't realize it until, CNN and MSNBC and Fox and everyone wants an interview. I'm like, we're trying to work here, and they're wanting the story.
Mm-hmm.
And so that is how that happened, and again, it will never be the same here in Dallas.
Yeah.
Because of what happened.
Sure. Well, going back to the faith angle you just mentioned, really, you have endured a lot of losses in life and a lot of tragedy. So I'm curious, a lot of people who would go through something like that might either stop believing in God or turn their back on their faith. Mm-hmm. So I'm curious, are there times in your life when faith is more a choice than a feeling? Sometimes maybe you don't feel that connection with God, but you mentally choose to follow him anyway.
It happened differently for me, I've understood that to happen to people as well, that when you end up making a mental choice. That's not how it happened with me. When Walter Williams, my partner in the police academy, and we ended up being partners on the beat, he was killed 5 years into the job. We were I'm 28 years old when he's killed. And at that point, I did not understand how bad things happen to good people.
Yeah,
and I thought Walter was one of the best friends I've had, and just a good cop, did everything the right way, encouraged me to move up the ranks, encouraged me to one day aspire to be chief. And he's killed in the line of duty, and leaves his widow and kids without a husband and father. And I go to a prayer meeting that week, and I go Wednesday. I don't go to that prayer meeting for prayer or consolation. I go to tell the Lord goodbye. That religion doesn't protect us from these types of tragedies. So I was going to quit. I was going to do it in church and walk out the door and leave. And the older women in the church that were in that prayer meeting all got up and gave testimonies about how they had gone through tragedies and the Lord had sustained it. I mean, one person after person after person, mostly women, recounted their testimony to me. Mm-hmm. And then I came back the next week and the next week and the next week, and my faith was restored. So I don't know that I made a mental decision to stick with my faith.
Yeah.
I think my faith wouldn't let me go. I think that's what happened. That when I wanted to quit, the Lord wouldn't quit me. He wouldn't allow me. He would give me that reassurance, that grace and mercy, that unmerited favor to keep me going when I wanted to quit.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I really rationally wanted to quit, emotionally wanted to quit. I didn't see the reason to serve the Lord if we're going to still go through tragedies. And now, upon reflection, it makes sense after you can be in a position to console families because you have had to be consoled. You know what to say because people have said the right things to you to keep you encouraged. So July 7th makes sense only because of my sticking with my faith.
Yeah, yeah. The witness of good and faithful people is really was Jesus working in your life at a time when you were ready to turn your back. I'm Tony Rossi. You're listening to Christopher Close Up. I'm talking to retired Dallas Police Chief David Brown. His book is Call to Rise. I keep saying you're retired, but from the book, it sounds
not really.
You're
not really.
Yeah, I was going to say, it sounds like you're still focusing on public service in a way. So talk about your retirement and what your plans are.
So I've always complained about the media. I have, and the way they shape stories. So now, it's one of those put up or shut up. That's why I went to policing, is to make a difference. And so now I'm a member of the ABC News team, and I'm on air contributor about policing and race and social injustice. So I get on television and get, a soundbite that's fair and balanced, in my opinion, from both sides of the issues of policing and social and racial injustice. So I get a chance to do something about what I complain about.
Mm-hmm.
In addition to that, of course, I'm serving on boards and foundations that help with mental illness, drug treatment, and early childhood education funding and policy.
Yeah.
And again, I feel like I owe, people something because of how I've been blessed. So I'll probably always be in service some way. I don't have inclinations to be in politics, but I do have an inclination to serve people because of how I've been so blessed, and I want to give it back.
Sure, sure. Well, basically, all the work the Christophers do and the theme of this show is reflects the motto, it's better to light one candle than to curse the darkness. So in turn, when you look back at your life, and even in this book, as you recount in Call to Rise, how does that idea of lighting a candle rather than cursing the darkness, how has that idea worked its way through your life?
It has always been kind of a resonating theme in my life, only upon reflection. When I'm going through the ups and downs and the ebbs and flows of life, it makes no sense. And, of course, some people can't reflect. They just kind of grind it out and get discouraged or whatever. But I would encourage people to reflect and look back at incidents and how they get through and how they become better and how that helps them their lives having that experience, even though it was painful and negative.
Mm-hmm.
And then it helps you kind of be a pass-through blessing to someone else. I mean, I think the purpose of our faith is that we will take our experiences with the Lord and be a benefit to somebody else. And that was my policing for 33 years. And upon reflection, that's been my life. And I would suspect we all have that perspective if we were to take the time to reflect and see how good the Lord's been to us and share that with someone else to their benefit without expecting anything in return. That's been my life, and it works so well for me that I want to share it and so that it can work well for others.
Wonder, beautifully said. I'm Tony Rossi. You're listening to Christopher Close Up, and I have been talking to retired Dallas Police Chief David Brown. His book is Call to Rise, and it's more than a memoir of his own ability to rise after the tragedies and challenges he's faced. It's really an example for all of us, because it's easier to descend into hate than to rise toward love. But really, that's the witness that Chief Brown gives us in this book, Call to Rise. He shows us how to rise toward love and how to move beyond these divisions we are struggling with in society today. So I encourage you to pick up Call to Rise by Chief David Brown. And Chief Brown, thank you so much for sharing your story today.
Thank you for having me, Tony. Take care.
Now, before we end today's show, here's a message the Christophers would like to share with you.
The most difficult trials in life demand that we dig deep within ourselves to find the capacity for courage that God has bestowed upon the human soul. But courage begins with an act of the will to persevere through pain, suffering, and even failure. To help you along that path, the Christophers have prepared a news note called Finding the Courage Within. It offers insights on building character, cultivating the ability to act courageously, and making sacrifices for the greater good. To request your free copy of Finding the Courage Within, send an email to radio@christophers.org or call our toll-free number at 1-888-298-4050. We look forward to hearing from you.
In closing, I want to thank all our listeners for tuning in today, and I encourage you to visit our website at christophers.org to learn more about the Christophers and to download free literature and podcasts. When you're there, you can also find links to our blog and our Facebook and Twitter pages. And if you have any questions or comments about the show, you can send an email to radio@christophers.org. Our engineer for today's show is Brian Bonifacio, and I'm Tony Rossi, your host. Thanks again for joining us, and remember that it's better to light one candle than to curse the darkness.